Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness Birthday Edition. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Over there, that's the birthday boy, little Timmy David Dennis. He's all grown up now. Quite the little man. Who's my little man? Who's my little man? Happy birthday, Tim.
Well, thank you. That'd be me, the little man.
Yeah. Happened earlier this week.
Happened earlier this week, but we are now recognizing said birthday.
It did. I had a little birthday celebration on Monday. Yeah,
very nice. It was a busy damn week. You know, we had our good friend from college had a birthday.
Yep.
Guy who created the theme song for Darkness Radio.
And I'm still in that vocal intonation.
And Beyond the Darkness. He's been a busy boy. Yeah.
Of course, Tim Dennis's 49th googie-goggie birthday.
Yes,
and then, of course, my own lovely wife, Winifred, who celebrated her 38th birthday on Wednesday. So,
yes, she did, yeah.
We've just had tons of birthdays. Plus, there was many others sprinkled in throughout the week. It seemed like every time I turned around, somebody had their damn hand out looking for a birthday gift.
Wow, sons of bitches. I didn't ask for a thing. I didn't want
to. No, you didn't. Yep. And you got exactly what you asked for.
I did. I got a whole lot of nothing in my palm.
Yep. Before we go too much further, Tim, I've got to mention our sponsor from Amazon Prime. Carnival Row is out and available now. And this show is phenomenal. I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I love this TV show. It is fantastic. Beautifully shot. Remarkably acted, and it is a fantastic program that is going to appeal to our audience. You guys got to go check it out for yourself. With a serial killer loose on Carnival Row and a government that turns a blind eye to the deaths of its lower class citizens, Ryecroft Fillestrate, a war-hardened investigator played by Orlando Bloom, is the only person willing to stop the murders and maintain the fragile peace. But when Vignette Stonemoss, a fairy refugee, turns up in the Berg, she forces Philo to reckon with a past that he's tried to forget. It has got all types of fantastic elements twisted together into one breathtaking tale. Check out Carnival Row right now on Amazon Prime. Timmy D, we've got a lot of stories to cover. This has been a crazy week. Since we're talking entertainment news, why don't we just knock out all those entertainment stories? You'll have to do a little picking and weaving through your list, but let's talk all of the strange paranormal entertainment news that's out.
Sure, let's talk Ghostbusters right away, Dave. Let's talk about it returning to theaters in October with some rare alternate takes of some famous scenes. Ahead of next year's Jason Reitman-directed sequel to Ghostbusters, Ivan Reitman's original classic is once again gearing up to return to theaters for the Halloween season. In celebration of the paranormal comedy's 35th anniversary, Fathom Events is giving you the chance to get slimed again for two nights only. That'll be Sunday, October 6th and Thursday, October 10th. The re-release will bring Stay Puffed and the gang into more than 600 theaters nationwide. The special 35th anniversary presentation of Ghostbusters will feature an introduction that reunites key members of the cast of this iconic film, sharing the memories of making a film that remains a cultural touchstone. This, according to Fathom, the introduction will also include newly unearthed and rarely seen alternative takes from famous scenes. Interestingly enough,
now that sounds cool. I'd love to see it with scenes that we've never been able to witness before.
Yeah, and tickets, I guess, are now available around the country for these Fathom events. So check out at Fathom Events website where you can see it around the country.
I love Fathom Events, too. They're not even a sponsor on the show, but I've gone to see some really great programming through Fathom Events, like when the Doctor Who specials have come out.
Yep.
They'll have special, you know, like interviews, behind-the-scenes things before the screening of the episodes or the movie or whatever you're going to see. It's always well worth it, and it's great to see some of this stuff, because when else are you going to get a chance to see it on the big screen?
Exactly. It's great to see a lot of that stuff on the big screen, that's for sure. Catherine Newton wants to switch bodies, or is being forced to, on film with Vince Vaughn in a new Blumhouse horror comedy. Blumhouse is going into business with Happy Death Day writer and director Chris Landon. It was announced that the studio will produce an untitled horror comedy starring Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton, which was co-written by Landon and Michael Kennedy. The plot, the movie concerns a high school girl, reading is hard today, Dave, played by Newton, who ends up switching bodies with the serial killer terrorizing her town. This means Vaughn will presumably spend most of the movie with the consciousness of a teen girl, while Newton plays it like she has the mind of a towering, cold-blooded killer. She's been a slight yet obstinate teen on Big Little Lies for 2 seasons, which is only a few degrees less frightening than a super killer. Considering that Vaughn has spent the last few years playing heavies and hardasses in very serious movies by writer and director S. Craig Zahler, this will be a nice little return to his looser comedic days. You really do love to see it. Landon is coming off Blumhouse's Happy Death Day to You, but his roots with the studio go back to 2010's Paranormal Activity 2, which he wrote the script for. Of his new movie, the writer-director tells Vulture, "In my crazy quest to find ways to reinvent the idea of the final girl, I'm beyond excited to make this movie. My co-conspirator and co-writer, Michael Kennedy, and I have concocted the most insane fun movie, and we can't wait to unleash holy hell." So there you go.
I loved The Final Girl. If you guys haven't seen it and you're a horror movie fan, you really got to check it out. It's a cool movie. It's a great twist to it. Check out that one as well. So, just knowing that they're involved makes it more interesting to me.
There you go.
Speaking of, let me mention something real quickly here.
Sure.
For the weekend vibe, out on Blu-ray and DVD now at the boxes that are red, Tim. Mm-hmm. They're not a sponsor, so I'm not going to give a full rider.
Yes.
But at those video rental places that are red and box-like, I just rented, and let me tell you the mistake I made. I just rented Brightburn.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I sat down to watch it with my family last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tim. My family.
Your family, yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, basically what it is it's the story of Superman.
Uh-huh.
If he was not inherently good.
Oh.
They don't even hide the fact. I mean, it takes place in Brightburn, Kansas.
Sure.
A barren couple has a UFO crash, and they find a baby inside and raise it as their own.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very Clark Kent looking, but his name is Brandon Bryant instead of Clark Kent. And but as Brandon's getting closer to, you know, teen years, something is awakening inside him, and his spaceship, the alien race that sent him here, awakens something inside him. And I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of a cool anti-hero. What we saw for the next 95 minutes or so was a violent horror movie, superhero movie.
Hmm.
I loved it personally.
Okay.
My two little guys left the room terrified. It's violent. It's got some good scares in it, but I loved it just because I've always wanted to see a Superman movie where he is what we would see today. I honestly believe if Kal-El crashed on Earth in 2019,
mm-hmm.
this is the kind of obstinate little prick we would have to deal with. Right? No, you can't spank your kids now. You can't lock them in closets. I mean, you can, but it's now it's frowned upon. Tim.
Yeah, I think they call it abuse now.
Yeah. So, but those quote unquote abuses that kept you and I in line, so we're respectful adults.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And we're good kids.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've lost on current generations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if that happened and there wasn't, you know, Martha and Jonathan Kent to lay down the law
right.
and keep young Clark in line,
yeah.
that's what you would get in this movie. And it's good. I enjoyed it. I would say out of 5 stars, I would give it a solid 3.5 stars for entertainment and just, you know, comic book nerdery. Now, for most of you that are kind of burned out on superheroes, this one's okay because it feels more like a horror movie. It really does with the superhero slant.
Hmm.
So... And I shouldn't say superhero slant. It's basically, what if Lex Luthor was Superman? He's just a homicidal maniac. But it's a fun little movie. Again, 3.5 out of 5 stars. It's a great rental, you know, for kicking around at the house. So go check it out for yourself. All right, where are we going next, sir?
Well, if you want to continue on the entertainment scene, I can.
Yes.
Yes. You know, coming up tonight, as a matter of fact, Dave, is our good friend Chris Jericho is wrestling tonight in the main event of AEW's All Out, which is taking place in Chicago at the Sears Center. And there's a little rumor that's swirling around, Dave, because today CM Punk is taking place at a little event called StarCast. He's doing a Q&A. And there's a popular rumor out there, Dave, that CM Punk, who hasn't wrestled in a wrestling ring in quite some time, he's done some horribly, horribly terrible MMA work in UFC. He's 0-2, Dave, and he's been knocked out twice. That he may return to the wrestling ring tonight. Now, this is just a rumor. There's nothing concrete about it. In fact, he himself has said, no, I'm not going to do that. In fact, I'm not even going to step in the ring. But he has shown up. Earlier this year in a ring in West Allis, Wisconsin, but it was underneath a mask. What does this have to do with anything in the paranormal, Tim?
That's what I was curious about. Yeah.
Well, here's what it has to do with that.
Are you going to tell us?
No. I'm just going to espouse about stuff having to do with wrestling because it feels good. CM Punk has been dabbling in other worlds while he's been away from the wrestling ring. He's written comic books. He's took on other genres. In fact, he's in a horror movie, Dave, and it's coming out here. In fact, it's coming out here relatively soon, and there's a trailer out for it right now. He's experiencing a bloody paranormal nightmare in Girl on the Third Floor, and actually, Punk has been talking about it on the talk show circuit, and he's excited about it. He thinks this is a pretty darn good movie. Former WWE superstar Phil CM Punk Brooks will soon be seen in the Soska Sisters remake of David Cronenberg's Rabid, and he's also the star of the show in the upcoming Girl on the Third Floor. Punk plays the lead role in the Dark Sky horror film, the writing directorial debut of producer Travis Stevens from We Are Still Here. It's headed our way in October. The official trailer has arrived, and it's promising a crazy, bloody, haunted house horror show. This looks totally bonkers if you've seen it, and it should make for perfect Halloween viewing. Punk stars as Don Koch, a man who is failing as a husband, and he now views fixing up an old house as a chance to make up for past mistakes. Meanwhile, his wife, Liz Koch, is concerned about the renovation timeline as they have a baby on the way. As Don tears the house apart, it begins to tear him apart as well, revealing the rot behind the drywall. Treese Dunn from Banshee and Alyssa Dowling from We Are Still Here and Sarah Brooks also star in that movie. Girl on the Third Floor heads to theaters and digital platforms on October 25th. And you can see the trailer online right now for Girl on the Third Floor, and he looks absolutely maniacal. I mean, he's shaved off his... A lot of CM Punk fans are familiar with the beard and whatnot. He shaved the beard off, and he does
people
look...
People are familiar with his whatnot?
His beard. He has a full beard.
Oh, well, you said his beard and whatnot. I was like, I didn't know that he was that kind of guy.
Well, not as...
Showing his beard and his whatnot.
No, not that, Dave. Come on now. Let's not be ridiculous.
How do I know?
But yeah, he looks pretty maniacal in the trailer. That's for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Have we got any more entertainment news?
We do, Dave. You know, last Sunday we had on a couple of the stars of the new Ghost Hunters TV show. I don't know if you've checked it out yet or not, but it's pretty intriguing. It's pretty intriguing viewing.
I do. I actually liked it.
Yeah.
And they went to the Pocatello High School in Idaho.
Yep.
Which is extremely hard. I was trying to get into that for the Ghost Adventures TV show, and we would vacillate back and forth. They would, yeah, no, we better not. Well, all right, no, we better not. I really like the tact that Ghost Hunters took with it, and that they were able to debunk some things and actually walk us through some of that for the episode. So personally, I enjoy the reboot.
Yeah, and we had Brandon Elvis on. We had Mustafa Gadalari on. The two guys were very warm, very engaging. We had a great time together. And I enjoyed the show as well. I thought it was very warm, very engaging, and I think this new team is great. I absolutely love the new team. There's an article out there focusing on Daryl Marston and Kristen Luman. The two of them, of course, are on the team as well, this new team. Both Daryl Marston and Kristen Luman are well-respected in the field of paranormal investigation, so it's really no surprise that they were asked to co-lead Grant Wilson's elite ghost hunting team. In that premiere episode that we've been talking about, that aired on A&E, the team investigates, as Dave put out or said, that school in Pocatello, Idaho, that is renowned for being haunted. Ahead of the debut, they had this article I'm reading from 1428 Elm. I had a chance to sit down and talk to Daryl and Kristen about their backgrounds and their deep desire to help those in need. And they said that it's all about leading with the heart. Kristen went on to say, I was picked for a show on Sci-Fi called Ghost Mine because of my education in parapsychology. And that show actually held the time slot right after Ghost Hunters. That's where I gained recognition in the field. She went on to say, a few years later, I was asked to guest star on Ghost Hunters, although Grant had already left by that time. Him picking me as a member of this team was the first time I actually got to meet him. Daryl went on to say, getting on Ghost Hunters was a complete surprise. I was in the kitchen at about 7 p.m. at night back in February playing Nerf Gun Wars with my 7-year-old son, Aaron, and received a phone call asking me to try out for a paranormal show. At the time, I had no idea it was Ghost Hunters until I was flown to L.A. to interview for the actual job. And after about 6 weeks of back and forth emails, phone calls, and Skype interviews, I was hired. And a week later, I was on a plane to our first case. And no, I've never worked with Grant before. We didn't know Grant was involved at all until the night before our first case, and it was a complete surprise. Pilgrim and A&E did a great job with keeping that from us. Daryl went on to say, as a contractor, they had asked the question, 1428 Elm did, you both have very interesting backgrounds that give you different insights into the various cases that you take on. They asked Daryl first, you've led your own successful team in Delaware for many years, and he was a firearms instructor and contractor, two very interesting skill sets that served him well in his present career. And then they asked him, how did you become involved in paranormal investigations? And he says, as a contractor, he knew homes inside and out, so when he was on a case, it was pretty easy for him to disclaim certain noises and other simple things like plumbing, HVAC, and electric as not paranormal. He also said, he had to put some theories to the test, like the fact that when someone is doing work or demo on an active location, it can also raise the activity in that particular locale. He said, we actually tested this on one of our episodes, and it was quite amazing to see the results. He said, back in the mid-2000s, he was invited to a paranormal investigation during a Halloween event, and after about 3 hours, he said, I was hooked and knew I wanted to do this as a hobby, but I never guessed it would get me on Ghost Hunters. 1428 Elm then asked Kristen, as a hypnotherapist, you're keenly aware of how the mind can be prone to suggestion. Does this training enable you to flesh out false claims or determine poltergeist activity as opposed to a traditional haunting? Since you are a parapsychologist, what questions on your checklist or on your checklist when you are looking to verify paranormal phenomenon? She went on to say, I like to try to go into any location very neutral by not trying to prove anything or disprove anything. She said, I believe that's the best place to function from as an investigator because it helps you take in the experience authentically as opposed to consciously or unconsciously trying to make an experience happen. She said, I interview a paranormal witness with the mindset of how might it have been possible for he or she to have this experience without there actually being a spirit involved. She said, in parapsychology, we call it misperception, which I believe accounts for many ghostly experiences. I try to find out the state of mind the paranormal witness was in when he or she had their experience. Were they woken from their sleep? Were they stressed? Did they know the place was haunted beforehand? Have they had an experience like this before? Yeah. What are their belief systems? As our perception shapes our reality, and even though it may be uncomfortable for some, if they are on any medications or have any history of mental illness or mental impairment, as of all of these things can play into having a paranormal experience. So there you go. That was kind of a...
I really like Kristen. Yeah, I've met her on a couple of occasions, and I worked with her through the dark zone. And she's a sweetheart and super intelligent. And I really appreciate her tact towards people, the psychology of a haunting, and why people feel the way they do when it comes to that. So very cool.
Absolutely.
Every car comes with a share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in just minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers are not available in all areas. This entertainment section was brought to you by Amazon Prime's Carnival Row. The new series is out and available on Amazon Prime right now. Go check it out. You guys are going to love it. It's fantasy. It's fiction. It is a great mix of supernatural, thriller, serial killer, and more. You're going to love the show. Go check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. All right. We've got phone lines, Tim. I don't know if you're aware of this, a little thing we call the Voices from Beyond voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
People can call into the show, Tim, leave their stories, Tim, share with us their supernatural adventures, Tim. Are you aware that we even do this, Tim?
Yes, I am. I cut it up, Dave, every week, Dave.
That's right. Well, I just wanted to make sure that we hit that so people paid attention.
Oh, okay.
The phone number, 651-300-4977. Dave, how am I going to remember that? Well, because I just told you it's 651-300-4977. First of all, it's a pretty easy number to remember. 651, bam. It's like 6, 5, and 1. So it starts with a 6. Then you have a 5 and a 1, which makes like another 6. So that's an easy one to remember, Tim. Then 300, 651-300, and then, Tim, 4977. Do you know what that spells out?
No, what does it spell out?
Absolutely nothing. Oh, but it's 4977. That's pretty easy to remember. Okay, so it's 651-300-4977. Call in, share your paranormal encounters, just like this caller did.
Hey, Dave and Tim, this is Aaron. I had several experiences at what I would consider to be some sort of hot spot at a family cottage in Carroll County, Ohio, literally in the middle of nowhere on a lake. So the first experience happened probably when I was around, I would say, 7 or 8 years old. We were out on our pontoon boat and coming back from fishing with our family. So it was me, my parents, big brother, and uncle, aunt, grandparents. So it was a loaded pontoon boat full of people and a beautiful summer afternoon. And as we were coming back to our dock, there looked to be what looked like when you see a airplane and the light reflects off of the airplane and it creates like this big bright light. And that's what it looked like for a moment. But then it started moving erratically and, literally all over the place, changing direction, had no sound, was zigzagging, and just literally looked like a light dancing in the afternoon bright summer sky. And all of us were seeing this. I remember as a kid seeing this and just wondering what in the world this was or what kind of airplane that could have been, because that was really cool. And my parents and the adults that were all with us were just struck with awe, staring up at this. And it was so interesting, in fact, because I remember the boats that were stopping and people all over that portion of the lake, several other boats were stopping and looking up at this and pointing, and we were all looking at each other, and the adults were even looking at each other and shrugging and lifting their shoulders up like, what in the world is happening? And to this day, we talk about it with my uncle and my parents, and just kind of reminisce about that. So that was the first paranormal experience that we had down there. The second one is kind of a two-parter, and this involves Sasquatch experience, in my opinion. So what happened in this situation was happened probably about 5 years ago, the first portion. It was the weekend of my birthday, July 27th, 2013, and me and my brothers were down on our dock fishing, and if you were to look to the shore from our dock, there's about 3 miles straight in front of you and to the right of county-owned national forest. And it's pretty thick. There's caverns and giant rocks and boulders, and it's a very, very dark, deep, hilly forest in Carroll County. And what happened was we are talking about some of the stories of people seeing Bigfoot down there, and it's not uncommon to hear people talk about that. So my brothers and I were talking about it at this point, and we heard what sounded like tapping on the trees or somebody knocking on the trees, and thought someone was playing a joke on us. And it really sounded like a male white-tailed deer hitting his antlers on some trees. But then it started getting closer. You heard some sounds of more like grunting, and we were still kind of joking around about it, but also a little bit nervous. And you started smelling that whole sulfur smell that people talk about during Bigfoot experiences, Sasquatch, whatever. So it stopped right around 1 o'clock. We were out catfishing at 1 o'clock a.m. And as I'm walking up to our cottage, I just needed to go take a leak. And I'm walking up, and to play a joke on my brothers, I decide that I'm going to pick up about a softball-sized rock and chuck it as hard as I could into the woods, hear it knock around, and just give them a bit of a startle. Well, it worked. I did that. And about 10 yards I was walking, so just a couple of seconds later, the rock came back out of the woods and landed in front of me, which made me basically crap my pants. And I took off up to the cottage, and needless to say, I didn't come back down to go fishing. The next morning, I did tell them the story. They were pretty bummed out about me leaving them without telling them what happened. And I just told them I was tired. I needed to go to bed anyhow. But they knew otherwise. So the very following year, same birthday weekend for me, weekend of July 27th, went down to the cottage again, and had a friend with me this time, and I told him the story. He knew about it, and it was kind of cool because we were out catfishing, same scenario, and we were sitting there talking about it, and I was describing like where we heard the sound from and things like that. And this particular night, there was a lot of people that were down in the community, which was off to the left of the heavily wooded area, and there's no houses or cottages in the wooded area whatsoever. So, but the housing area was really busy this weekend. A lot of people were down partying, hooting, hollering. So my friend and I, we were just being funny, and you would hear the people partying yell. We would yell and kind of make the Sasquatch noises that you hear on Finding Bigfoot or whatever, and the boop, things like that. I know I sound ridiculous, but again, this it wasn't until later. The party winded down. we were still yelling and calling, making fun of the people who were probably passed out at this point. And we started hearing moving around, and not knocking this time, but just movement. And then sure enough, all the lights went out on the lake at about 2 a.m. It must be an auto thing, so there was no street lights that are typically out there, but it's dark anyhow. And we're sitting there just listening to the movement, and then we hear what sounds like somebody throwing a boulder into the water. I mean, bowling ball, sounded ridiculous. So the following morning, we went down the path to see if we could see what it was, look for footprints, things like that. No avail, but we did see what looked like a rock that was just recently thrown in there, and this rock had to be probably about 2 foot by 2 foot-ish, so a big solid piece of limestone, and just didn't seem possible. I'm a pretty built guy, or was at the time, and there's no way I could have thrown it in the water, me personally. So for a human to go through and do that, for a human to have the night vision and my part two of it, to see this rock and throw it back out, or whatever the case was, it seems pretty ridiculous. So I don't think that would be humanly possible. I'm a very realistic person, but at the same time, I question a lot of things, as well as science and things that we know. So I definitely believe that there's a spiritual realm. Me personally, I am a believer in God, but I am a believer in things that are supernatural, from whether it's extraterrestrials and Bigfoot or spiritual beings. I really liked a segment I was listening to earlier this week with an author, Strangest Things. He had some interesting concepts and shared a lot of similar beliefs to myself. So was really excited about that. Just found your guys' podcast and absolutely love it, and really appreciate what you guys are doing. Having fun while you're doing this. I have gone back, and I actually collected some trap cameras, and I got an infrared camera and things like that. And me and some friends want to go down. We did one investigation that yielded nothing, but we do want to do several investigations down there. And I got several friends and that are interested in doing this as well, and trying to do something to see if there's anything down there, if there is any warrant to my stories. So it's going to be pretty cool to see what happens next. I think our next trip down is planned for mid-September, when I'm on vacation for a few days. So I'll keep you guys updated. Keep doing what you're doing, and prayers with your family, Dave.
See, it's just that easy. That's how easy it is, Tim. All people have to do is pick up their phone, their cell phone, their Skype. They can contact us any way. They can dial this number, 651-300-4977, and share their stories with us right here on the air. It's very simple, very easy. We've put it all together in one comprehensive place, so go check it out for yourself. 651-300-4977. Call in, share your story. It's 3 minutes you could tell your story. If it goes longer, just call right back, continue your story. Tim will edit it together, and we will air it on an upcoming episode. All right, Mr. Dennis. Where are we off to next?
You say that so accusingly.
I don't know what you're saying, Mr. Dennis.
Well, Dave, we go to Paris, where the question has been raised. Did Princess Diana predict her own death months before that fatal Paris crash? I'll let you go dun, dun, dun at any time.
I didn't need to. You just did it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. In the early hours of the August 31st, 1997, hey, there's an anniversary coming up. See how I did that. The world woke up to discover truly shocking news. Princess Diana was dead following a midnight car crash in a tunnel in Paris. It was a singular decade-defining moment that rippled across the globe, resulting in an enormous outpouring of emotion and grief. No one knew how to respond, after all. Who could have even conceived of such a tragedy? According to Princess Diana's former butler, Paul Burrell, she did. She did. I can't even emphasize how many times I can say she did, Dave. Evidently, she foretold her own death.
She did?
She did.
Okay.
Yeah. In his 2003 book, A Royal Duty, Burrell wrote about a note he claimed Diana wrote to him just 10 months before the fatal crash, in which...
one of those ones.
A what, a fatal crash?
No, Royal Duty.
Oh, a Royal Duty?
Yeah, I visited White Castle, and afterwards, I had a Royal Duty.
Oh, did you?
I'm sorry, that was like the five-year-old in me. Go ahead, Tim.
Good God. You know we're going to get plenty of letters now from France.
I don't think so.
No. Am I getting the country wrong?
Probably. It took place in France. I'm going to be in France soon. I'll let you know if they're mad at us there, Tim.
Okay, please do. Yeah. This is just going to get more emails. Burrell wrote about a note he claimed Diana wrote to him just 10 months before the fatal crash, in which she reportedly predicted her own death, right down to the mode of transportation. The letter allegedly detailed Diana's fears that Prince Charles was planning, quote, an accident in my car. Please don't bring up the Royal Duty again, Dave. I'm just cutting this off at the pass. Oh, boy. And that this period of her life was the most dangerous, quote unquote. Burrell said that the letter was dated October 1996, just 2 months after Diana and Charles's divorce. The full passage reads, "This particular phase in my life is the most dangerous. My husband is planning an accident in my car, brake failure, and serious head injury in order to make the path clear for him to marry Tiggy." I didn't know that was her nickname. Really? Tiggy? Nothing better.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The letter went on to claim that both Diana and Camilla Parker Bowles were being used as a decoy by Charles, who was accused of actually wanting to marry Tiggy Leg Bork? Huh. Prince William and Harry's nanny. I didn't hear that theory, really.
Dun, dun, dun! There was a place for me to do that. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, there you go. I just threw it up like a little softball for you. Burrell kept the alleged note secret until the publication of his book and claimed it was given to him as an insurance policy, the Independent reported at the time. Prince Charles's name and references to Leg Bork were originally redacted when the letter was first published in an excerpt from Burrell's book in the Daily Mirror. Their names were only revealed in 2007 during the inquest into Diana's death. The inquest also heard how Diana wrote, "I am sitting here at my desk today in October, longing for someone to hug me and encourage me to keep strong and hold my head high." The authenticity of the letter was questioned by Diana's friends, such as Lucia Fletcher de Lima, claiming that the former butler actually forged the letter. Paul Burrell was perfectly capable of imitating Princess Diana's handwriting. "I don't believe she was fearing for her life, especially from Prince Charles, the future king of your country," she said at the inquest. The inquest finally announced its conclusion in 2008, when the jury ruled 9-2 that Diana's death was an accident caused by the grossly negligent driving of Henri Paul, whose blood alcohol level was 3 times the legal limit in France, and the pursuing paparazzi. It also highlighted Diana's not wearing a seatbelt as a factor.
That's interesting. So she was kind of putting it out there long beforehand, huh?
Supposedly. Now, it's interesting that, this friend comes along and says, well, Paul Burrell could have easily forged this. But is that the red herring that is put out there by Buckingham Palace to say, well, we throw this witness in there to throw you off, to discredit Paul Burrell as a credible source? I don't know. That's the beginnings of an interesting conspiracy theory. There's always that. We move on.
Well, let's do this. Let's move on. Okay. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We've got more news stories. We've got some of your Parashare stories, your phone calls, and emails when we return to Beyond the Darkness. The weekend's here. The time is right. And if you're looking for just the right show to binge, Tim, let me make a recommendation.
Sure.
Carnival Row. It's a 1-hour fantasy drama series starring Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne. The series is set in a Victorian fantasy world, and it's filled with mythological immigrant creatures whose exotic homelands have been invaded by the empires of man. You know how evil man is, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they struggle to coexist with humans, but they've been forbidden to live, love, or fly with freedom. Orlando Bloom plays Ryecroft Philostrate, also known as Philo, a police inspector investigating a string of gruesome murders threatening the uneasy peace of the row. Cara Delevingne plays Vignette Stonemoss, a fairy refugee who flees her war-torn homeland to come to the Burg, where she must contend not only with rampant human prejudice against her kind, but with the secrets that have followed her to this new land. But even in darkness, hope still lives, Tim, as the human detective and fairy rekindle their dangerous affair despite an increasingly intolerant society. Come together. It's on now. Started August 30th. You can watch all 8 of the episodes. They're available Carnival Row only on Amazon Prime Video this weekend. Looking for a great true crime series to binge? Podcast One teamed up with WTOP to bring you 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. Check out the full story of a family and their housekeeper that were held hostage for 22 hours before being killed when the murderers set their mansion on fire. You heard about it when we talked on our true crime program about this. Now you can hear the full version of the story from start to finish. Stay tuned for an exclusive Q&A with the reporters behind the show about their three-year-long journey for justice. Download 22 Hours, An American Nightmare, now on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Give us a call. Share your strange supernatural stories at 651-300-4977. We want to hear your tales of the bizarre, the supernatural, ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, psychic phenomena. Have you been probed by an alien or perhaps a Bigfoot? Have you been lost in a time loop? We want to hear all of your strange and supernatural stories. There's no reason for you not to call and share. I mean, there's none. No reason, people. Can you think of a reason, Tim? I can't think of a reason.
It's hard for me to think of a reason, to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just give us a call, for God's sakes. Phone lines are there. We're paying for them. 651-300-4977. You know who would call?
I don't know who would call.
This next caller.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Dave and Tim. It's Diane. I'm calling from Menifee. So I'm in Menifee, California. It's in basically Riverside area, Inland Empire. It's a little bit north of San Diego. It's in between San Diego and LA County and next to Orange County. I am 25 minute drive from March Air Force Base. The reason why I'm calling, I don't know if it's paranormal or anything, but it was just so weird last night. So, like I said, I live by the Air Force Base. It's the summertime. I sleep with the windows open. And always at nighttime, sometimes you'll hear the planes flying over going to March Air Force Base. Last night, I was sleeping with my boyfriend, and he woke up first. The sound, what it was, it woke us both up. So it woke him up first, and then I heard it. And so I've been living here for about 4 years. I know what the planes sound like, all kinds of different planes for the Air Force, you know, fast ones, whatever, just like, I know what they sound like. This one, it woke us both up. It was, like, reverberating on the windows, and it was this really deep, long, like vibrating noise, but this weird thing was, is that it lasted so long, but not only that, it lasted a long time, but, it was weird. It was so slow, like, and I didn't get to see it. Like, if I would have, and I thought about this, like, I could just get up, go outside, Well, I have to put my contacts on first because I'm blind. I have to get up, turn the lights on, put my contacts on, go outside and see what this was. But this happened at like 12 or 1 o'clock in the night, so I'm tired. I'm like, okay, you know, maybe it'll just go a minute and it'll go away. But we're both laying there, and how long it seemed like. I don't know if you guys ever seen the movie Spaceballs, but where the plane's going by, like, not the plane, the spaceship is going by super slow and it's taking forever. That's what it was like. It was going by so slow, but, and it was taking forever, and it was weird. Like, it was low to the ground, and I could, like, I know it sounds crazy, and I remember it was so loud, and, like, it was, like, crawling by slowly. It took a few minutes. Like, I was even sitting there thinking, like, if I get up and go, I can videotape this thing, but I was tired, like I said, so it didn't happen. And then, so after this thing finally slowly crawled out of the sky, like, passes over, right? Then the rest of the night, like, it's active, like, way active, like, loud, like, planes flying over, like, crazy, like, a lot, like, the rest of the night, and just, like, a loudness. I can't explain it. Like, usually planes, you just hear them going over, a couple, right? And like I said, it was active, but there was this weird noise lasting throughout until I fell back to sleep again, like, another 15 minutes. And it was just, I don't know, it was weird, so I don't know if it's paranormal, like I said, or maybe just anybody knows what it was and can tell me what it was. It was just the weirdest thing ever. So yeah, that's my story. If anybody knows, and they can let you know and let me know what it was, because that was the weirdest thing ever. Anyways, I love you guys. I love the show. I can't wait to hear you guys every Saturday and Sunday. You guys are the best. Love you. Bye.
Huh? See? Not that hard. A phone call, and you get highlighted on our show. Tell them what they win for sharing a story on our show, Tim.
What you win for sharing a story? You got your story on the air.
That's right. How much money, Tim? How much do they get for that?
$3 billion.
No, not that's incorrect, Tim.
Oh.
They get nothing.
Oh.
But you know why? Because we're worried about your tax breaks. And if we pay
you,
it could throw you over that level into the next tax day. So we're saving you money in the long run. But we still want to share and focus and have your story shared on the program. So thank you very much for calling in. We have another call we'll share in a little bit. But first, Tim, what's our next supernatural news tale?
Well, Dave, we're going to read about a Welsh hospice, and being this is everything having to do with Welsh pronunciations, I'm not going to claim that I know any of it because the Welsh don't speak English. So,
all right, well then here's the deal. I want you to just power through it unapologetically. Just say the words as you think they should be said. Don't question it. Just make it your own. Tim Dennis, I'm giving you that right.
Okay. I'll forward you the email.
That way people can send me the hate mail. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Children are memorialized in nature, Dave, after a hospice translates their names, which are Welsh, into bird songs, which had to sound like the birds were throwing up, for wild birds to mimic. A Welsh hospice has been honoring their deceased young patients in a powerful, one-of-a-kind way, Dave. The Tai Hafan Hospice Center in the Vale of Glamorgan has been translating... The names of children into bird songs, so the calls can be played through the speakers in the medical center's memorial garden to create...
That's beautiful.
It is. That is a beautiful thought. To create the bird song, sound engineer Justin Wigan translates the children's names into Morse code. He then works with hospital staffers to select a bird which best represents the deceased child so he can sample its unique chirp and use its sounds to spell out the name in Morse code. As the bird songs are played in the hospital's memorial garden, each name is followed by 1 second of silence for each year of the child's life. What makes the hospital's bird song project so unique is that birds can hear the names being played in the garden and mimic them in the wild, thus immortalizing a child's memory in nature. In terms of inspiration for the project, the care team wanted more of a unique way to remember the children who pass away, Tai Hafan spokesperson Danny Harries told Good News Network. Before birdsong, the names would be read out at an annual memorial service held at the hospice. And although this was lovely, it was very long and was only going to take longer. That was when we teamed up with Justin Wiggin on a soundscape project to explore the possibilities of a more innovative way to honor the children with a personal and special touch. Wiggin and the hospice team have already translated the names of more than 300 children who have died at the facility, and they don't plan on stopping their emotional tributes anytime soon. Now the bereaved parents can pop into the hospice memorial garden, sit down, and just listen to the bird song, which is played all year round. They also listen out for the song that represents their child, says Harry's. And the thought that this song could be mimicked by birds in the wild means that the child's name could really live on forever. Pauline Harvey, whose 10-year-old daughter Abigail was one of the children memorialized by the project, described the innovative as a humbling, breathtaking experience. I stood at the Memorial Garden gazebo, listening as the individual bird songs came from different areas of the garden, she wrote in a blog post. All the songs were different from each other, unique and beautiful. As a surprising thing happened, it felt as though the emotional downpour lifted and the sun came out from behind the clouds. The actual real rain continued unabated. The weather was horrific and clearly had no sense of occasion, the article went on to say. I felt overwhelming warmth and comfort. I was no longer waiting to hear Abigail's name. That didn't seem to matter anymore, she went on to say. She was part of a chorus. She was part of every bird song. The silences celebrated each individual's short life, but it all felt like the children were together in the song of each bird. Abigail is not alone, she concluded. She is with friends, and they are all joyfully singing.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
That is a neat story.
Yeah, very neat. It's training the birds to
learn how to sing these names.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, seriously, that has got to be one of the most beautiful little twists and stories I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Well done, yeah. People behind that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very nice. Very nice.
Very nice. I like you. Very, very nice.
Not like that. Come on.
Sorry. Wow.
Jesus.
Hey, Dave and Tim. That's us, by the way.
Oh, hi.
I wanted to share my experience with night terrors or sleep paralysis. I really don't know what it was for sure because I knew I was asleep and I would feel this darkness enter the bedroom. I never actually saw it. I could only feel it. It felt like 1,000 pounds weighing me down. I wanted to move, but I couldn't. The more I fought, the worse it got. Then I happened to watch a comedy show on Netflix called 3 Mics with Neil Brennan. And even though it's a comedy, he talks about depression. He said his depression felt like a weighted vest, but it wasn't life-threatening, but rather life-dampening. After hearing that, a light bulb went off in my head. I somehow made a connection between my night terrors and my depression. I realized the darkness I was feeling in the dreams was the same way my depression made me feel. The next time I felt the darkness coming into my dream, I told it something like, I know you are here and I'm not afraid of you. And it worked. I haven't had a nightmare since. Have you ever heard of a connection between the two before? I felt the need to share because I hope this story can help anyone else who might be dealing with night terrors. Sorry if this seems like I'm rambling on. I'm on some pretty heavy painkillers after a recent spinal fusion surgery. Ooh. Thank you guys for everything you do. I love the show. Thanks again, Hank. No, Hank, first of all, you're not rambling. That was a really cool concept, something unique and different. And boy, if there's a way to help people deal with the depression and the night terrors, and you just shared it, thank you so much. Yeah. We deeply appreciate that. That's an interesting facet.
Yeah, it is. And good luck with that spinal fusion recovery, brother. That's, man, terrifying stuff.
Well, thank you very much for sharing. And I know this is going to be a rough time. I hope you'll listen to our podcast to keep yourself entertained. And please, please reach out to us if there's anything we can do to help you. We appreciate you listening. All right, Tim, where is our next supernatural news story?
Well, Dave, this one's an unusual one. A doll possessed by a double-headed demon was caught on camera by a shocked dad. There's totally a double entendre behind this entire headline, but I won't go into it. Matt Tillett and Emma Wilcox from Wrexham believe a negative energy named Zozo, oh, we've heard of Zozo before, has attached itself to Annie. Zozo and Annie sitting in a tree. A dad believes he has captured an evil double-headed demon on camera in his own home. You heard it right. Paranormal investigator Matt Tillett and his partner Emma Wilcox say a malevolent being has possessed a doll they own and has even spoken to them. They bought the doll named Annie around 2 weeks ago, believing it could be possessed, and had it fitted with paranormal equipment in the hopes of proving there's life after death. Matt claims the supernatural entity constantly uses vile and nasty language and has even told his partner she was pregnant, which turned out not to be true. But this past Monday, they managed to catch the supernatural entity on camera at their home in Kaya Park, Wrexham, and now believe it has two faces. The shocked couple were filming when they saw a dark shadow pass across the screen of their phone. In video footage of the incident, Emma can be heard asking, "What was that?" before a voice comes through the spirit portal saying, "That was me." The 31-year-old dad said, "I've been investigating the paranormal for about 7 years and have been looking to get a haunted object or a demon in a box, as I want to prove there is something out there. We've been testing the doll out for about 7 days trying to get it to speak, and on Monday we heard it. We were so shocked when we heard it, as we've been trying so hard, plus all the lights started going off on the doll at the same time, so it was fantastic to get both. I had my camera set up in front of the doll, and Emma had her phone recording too. Emma saw something move past the camera, and you can hear her gasps, so she was shocked. We have also studied a photograph that we took and clearly see two faces, with one face looking at Annie and one at the camera." He claims the demon is called Zozo, which is believed to be one of the most negative energies that exist in the paranormal world. We have used a Ouija board and...
"Oh, sure. Take a look at the bad guy. Everybody picks out Zozo. Listen, I'm minding my own business, feet kicked up, enjoying a doobie, listening to a little Fleetwood Mac, and all of a sudden people start reaching out to me through the Ouija boards, and I respond, and now it's, ooh, look at creepy Zozo. He's a bad guy. If you didn't want to talk to me, why are you calling out to me? Come on, man. Just want to listen to a little lies. Tell me sweet little lies."
I just see Zozo sitting next to his piano, like looking like Rolf the dog.
What are you saying? It sounds nothing like Rolf the dog, Tim.
A little bit, yeah.
That was definitely Zozo the demon.
Looking like Rolf the dog.
Damn tootin' it is.
he says, "We've used the Ouija board and it claims it is called Zozo, which is a negative energy. The demon is also attached to Emma. It says it likes women and that it watches her."
Go ahead. So what's so negative about that? I'm positive. I like to look at women. Does that make me a bad guy? Then take a look at the bad guy. He's got a good point, Tim. Why does that make him negative?
I can just see the little ears flopping around as he says that. You know, with the little mug on the piano.
Laugh it up. Laugh it up, Dennis.
"It will always be with her now. It says some really vile and nasty things." Ooh, I want to hear the voice. "It even told her that she was pregnant once, which was false, as we even went..."
It's a joke, people. It's a joke. How is that bad? I'm like, "Oh, hey, have you been putting on a little weight, or are you pregnant?" Just kidding. I'm kidding. I said I'm kidding afterwards. That automatically, universally, makes it funny.
Were you crossing your fingers when you said it?
Didn't need to. I said I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. All right. It even told her that she was pregnant once, which was false, as we even went to get a test to check. You made them pay for a pregnancy test?
Oh, my God. Ashton Kutcher can jump out of a closet with a midget and scare the shit out of you, and he's a hero. I joke around and tell her she's pregnant. They had to lay out $18 for a pregnancy test. And take a look at the bad guy.
It's not the $18. It's going to the drugstore and the embarrassment. And, you know, you go to the family planning section and they think you're trying to buy condoms and you're not. And, you know, it's just it's the whole
somebody's
thing.
Somebody's got unresolved issues.
Well, maybe a little. Matt said, "From our research, this is one of the worst type of demons." I would agree, and corresponds with the Zozo experiences. He added, "We are really excited as we feel this proves there is something out there." Well, something kind of being a dick. Yeah, I mean, you know. Matt also hosts Paranormal.
Sticks and stones, fat boy.
Matt also hosts Paranormal Nights at local pubs. and offers to put people in touch with their deceased relatives. He decided to explore the paranormal after his friend died in a car crash when he was younger. He has used mediums to attempt to communicate, but decided to try and learn the skill for himself. Matt and Emma are not the only people to claim to have communicated with the Zozo demon. Dozens of people on online forums have told how they have conjured the evil spirit using Ouija boards, with the being spelling out profanities and even making threats.
Hey, that kills. Kills where I'm from.
Really, spelling out profanities. Bathroom walls weren't good enough?
Not at all.
There are stories about Zozo dating back more than 200 years, with the name appearing in the book Dictionnaire Infernal from 1818. Some paranormal experts believe that Zozo stems back to the ancient Mesopotamian god Pazuzu, which was a deliverer of pizza, I believe, in Mesopotamia, right?
That is true. If it's not there in 30 minutes or less, the pizza was free.
I see. It was also known as the King of Demons. Couldn't leave that for Ozzy, could you?
It was me first, man. Me first.
I see. The legend of Zozo has become so well known, in fact, that in 2012, a horror film called I Am Zozo was released. You didn't get any credit for that, though, did you?
I did not, as a matter of fact. And the guy that portrayed me did a shit job. That's all I got to say.
No IMDb page as of yet, though?
No.
Okay.
I don't buy into that nonsense.
All right. You can get in touch with Matt or make a booking with him by visiting his Facebook page at facebook.com/MattParanormal. Zuzu, where can we get a
Zuzu?
Zuzu.
What the hell, do I look like a character in a Jimmy Stewart movie?
I'm sorry, you're
My
not.
My name's not Zuzu, it's Zozo.
I'm sorry, you're not Zoot from the Muppets. Zozo, that's right. I kept thinking you're Pazuzu, too. Zozo, where can we get booking information for you?
You know, it's best to just reach out to me through my agent, Tim Dennis. His phone number is 612.
Hey, whoa. I'm not booking you.
Well, you're the closest thing I have to an agent, you belly-rubbing scrub hugger.
God. I don't own a Ouija board.
Belly-rubbing scrub hugger.
Yeah, I know. He's so mean.
What kind of language is that on the show?
I know.
Unbelievable. Jeez. Hit the hang-up button, Tim.
Click.
All right, we've disconnected Zozo.
Yep,
that's a weird story.
It really is.
It's weird to have him just pop in like that, unsolicited. We weren't even using a Ouija board, Tim.
No.
So, all right, where are we going next?
A ghostly figure, Dave.
Like, okay, man.
Man. Ghostly figure has been spotted in an open window at an abandoned mental asylum. Color me shocked. There's my cynicism for the day.
I don't think I've been big enough.
Yeah, I know, right? A team of paranormal investigators from Spirit Walkers, there's an interesting name, Dave, captured a spooky image which they believe to be a ghost standing by an open window at an abandoned mental asylum. In Ruthin, North Wales, Dave. The team also claimed for having video footage with the growling and screaming noises coming from inside the mental asylum. Six ghost hunters from the group Spirit Walkers went into the 200-year-old manor house armed with specialist equipment, including night vision cameras and EVP devices, is what they're calling them, Dave, on August 10th. 32-year-old Beth Hopper, who runs Spirit Walkers, said they only discovered the haunting images once they returned home, which is bad, bad, bad business, Dave. You want to review that stuff when you're on site. She said one image appears to show a shadowy figure standing next to a noose. The mom from Chester said, "We were filming through a broken window, and I just can't explain the growling sound I heard on film when I got back to the car. It's about 1 minute and 5 seconds into the footage, and I thought, what the hell is that? I also got those screams on the electronic voice phenomenon. It was quite disturbing. People have said to me that they can hear the sound of torture. If you picture the mental asylum and what might have happened there, that might explain it. It is just a horrible sound. I've been there several times and have heard voices and footsteps. One girl said she felt a nurse was standing right in front of her in the dark. We also heard reports of an ex-patient there who thinks he's a Roman soldier. Didn't most patients think there were Roman soldiers there if it was a mental asylum? What's that?
I said it would seem so.
Yeah, I would think so. And who marches up and down the corridor and throws stones at people. Well, you got to get their attention somehow. I was glad to get out of there in the end, but then when we did, we saw a noose hanging from the window that we had spotted with our torches before we went in. It wasn't until I lightened the picture later that we saw what could be a figure in the window. It was pretty creepy. Poole Park dates back to the 16th century when it was home to the Salisbury family, and the manor house was rebuilt for William Bagot, or Bagot, second Baron Bagot, whatever it is, in the 1820s. It was apparently lost in a bet by the family and was later sold to the District Health Authority, becoming a convalescent home and then an asylum used as an overspill for North Wales Hospital before closing in 1989.
Weird stuff, man.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave. Ooh, sorry, man. That's what this email says.
That's
just
fine.
Hi, Dave.
It's only my birthday. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, sometimes they start off that way and then they finish strong with like, oh, and tell Tim I adore him and want to have his babies.
I've never heard that on this show.
let's see if that's how Brian ends this email.
Oh, Brian.
Hi, Dave. This was posted in a group I follow on Facebook. Have you heard of this? Since it's here in Minnesota, I thought I'd share. August 27th, 1979. That would be, what, 40 years ago, Tim?
Yeah, I just turned 9 years old.
Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson of Marshall County, Minnesota, was on duty that night, driving not far from the North Dakota border, when at around 1:40 a.m. he saw a light through his side window. It was obviously not on a road and looked too glaring to be a car headlight. He first thought it might be a small plane on or very near the ground. He turned left on another road to try to get closer to the light to identify it. Suddenly, the light moved toward him, traveling so fast that it almost instantaneously was upon his car, covering an estimated mile and a half. Johnson was blinded by the brilliance of the light and heard glass breaking. That's when he lost consciousness. When he returned to consciousness, the car was stalled and had skidded across the highway. He felt sluggish and shaky. He radioed headquarters at 2:19 a.m. to request assistance. Soon another deputy arrived, who called an ambulance. The doctor who examined Johnson found him to be in a mild state of shock. His eyes were irritated, as if Johnson had suffered mild welder's burns, and Johnson couldn't stand to be exposed to any bright lights. The patrol car had very peculiar damage. The inside headlight of the driver's side was smashed, but not the one to its immediate left. There was a flat-bottom circular dent on the left side of the front hood, about a half inch in diameter, close to the windshield. There was a crack in the windshield on the driver's side that ran from the top to the bottom with four apparent impacts. The electric clock was running 14 minutes slow, as was Johnson's wristwatch. The antenna of the roof, the shaft of the roof antenna was bent over at a 60-degree angle, starting about 6 inches above its base. Tim, I'm just talking about the shaft.
What you talking about, shaft?
Shut your mouth. The trunk antenna was bent over. I know that's how you like it, Tim.
Well,
the trunk antenna was bent over at 90 degrees, but only near the tip. No damage occurred to the car's regular antenna on the front hood. Essentially, all the damage to the car occurred on the left or driver's side. Investigations occurred immediately, both by the sheriff's department and by investigators from the Center for UFO Studies. The police determined that Johnson's car traveled about 950 feet after the first damage occurred. No cause could be found for the event, including collision with another vehicle or low-flying plane, a hoax on the part of Johnson, or anything else. Yeah, you don't want a Johnson hoax, Tim.
No, you don't. No.
In addition, experts from Ford Motors, the vehicle was a 1977 Ford LTD, and a team of engineers from Honeywell examined various portions of the car. And they conclude that all the cracks were from mechanical forces of unknown origin, Tim. Unknown origin. No cause could be found for the clock running slow, the peculiar antenna damage, or the other physical traces. Fortunately, Johnson's eyes healed quickly, and he suffered no lasting effect from the close encounter. The squad is now in a museum piece in Warren, Minnesota. And that comes from Brian Ness, who says, P.S. Tell Tim, happy birthday. I love him and would like to have his children.
Nah, you made that up.
I might have, Tim. Yeah. I'm not certain. There's a chance that part could have been embellished a little bit.
I think it was, yeah.
All right. Where else are we going to go in supernatural news?
We're going to Augusta, Georgia. Dave, there are spirits lurking in a downtown Augusta historic house, according to some paranormal investigators. One even has a name, Dave. You can name your spirits if you'd like. After several reports of possible ghosts at Ware's Folly, home to the Gertrude Herbert Institute of Art, that's pretty classy, Dave, if you think about it. I just see a small guide inside the Institute of Art going, "Welcome to the Gertrude Herbert Institute of Art." I don't know why, I just do. One of the board members decided to call in some paranormal investigators. Investigators spent a few hours in the building and said they found a few spirits. Executive director for the Gertrude Herbert Institute of Art, Heather Williams, said about a year and a half into working at the Institute, she had some stories about some spirits and heard some as well. Later on, she began to experience some unusual activity herself. She said, "We had one day where a book sort of flew off of the shelf. It was a large three-ring binder, and it should have toppled off the shelf if somebody had just bumped it, but there was nobody there, and it shot out and then dropped. That was the first time we had anything that really happened. That was a little off." Another time, Williams and other staff members heard footsteps and even called the police to check things out. The footsteps got closer and closer to where our stairs are, and the stairs led down to our offices, and they're carpeted. And then we heard what sounded like a foot dragging on the carpet. It kind of freaked us out. We grabbed our purses and we left. We called the police and just asked them to do a walkthrough of the building, she said. Turns out Heather may be working with a few spirits. About 2 months ago, the Institute called in Middle Georgia Paranormal Investigations. The investigators said they found a few spirits in the 200-year-old house, including one named Ian. See, they have names. In a video of their findings, you can hear an investigator say, "Can you tell us your name?" Then the spirit replies with, "Ian."
Well, that's very proper and nice.
It is, isn't it? Investigators said another one told them to go away. I don't know why he's speaking in a British accent there in Georgia. And from the attic, they said they heard another one sigh. I don't know. Yeah, I like that. Just the fact that there was anything at all was kind of cool, said Williams. Now the staff hopes to make it something everyone can enjoy. I think what we're looking into doing is maybe having some kind of a late night dinner, something that is kind of themed around the history of the building, she said. We've also talked about costume parties and themes, historical parties, etc. The staff said they plan to have an event scheduled soon for October. We'll let you know when we have those details. So they just went from having the crap scared out of them to planning dinners around it, Dave.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
I guess so.
Mark Brinkerhoff, our guest tomorrow, Tim, he is a true UFO repeater, and he's established contact with humanoid-like entities from other spheres and dimensions. He claims he has the ability to just aim his camera at the sky when they tell him to, and he will capture unexplained images on film. So you want to tune in tomorrow to hear this story and hear some of his actual firsthand accounts. So tune in and check that out tomorrow. Speaking of firsthand accounts, Tim, you know what I love about this show?
What's that?
That we're so easily accessible. Do you know what I mean by easily accessible, Tim?
We'll date anybody?
No, I'm married. My wife would frown heavily upon that. But maybe. What it means, Tim, is that we're easy to contact.
Oh.
You can always email me, dave@darknessradio.com, to share your stories. You could always email tim@darknessradio.com to be mad at him for the way he pronunciated all of the enunciated words that he misappropriatedly, spokenly said.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you can also call us. That's an easy way to reach out to us. Like Tim's number, 612.
No,
what?
No, don't give my number out.
Oh, fine. Then just call our Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977. You can leave us a voicemail if you just want to say hi, tell us how much you love us, tell Tim you want him to be the father of your children. You can leave that message. We prefer you call to tell us your stories of the supernatural, just like this caller.
Hi, lads. My name's Kevin. I'm from Scotland. Long-time caller, first-time listener, eh? Just want to tell you a story about maybe some of you guys will know Venice and specific Gradoja's Palace in there. So for me, what happened was I was in there with my ex-partner and we were, you know, going on a sightseeing tour. There was one outside the what turned out to be the kind of the council room where people passed judgment on people, i.e. the doges and the gentry, etc. I was very nervous, wouldn't get out straight away, didn't like it, and then just the next room turned out to be where prisoners after they'd been sentenced were taken out. Again, didn't like that, agitated, just wanting to get out. And the weird thing was, you go through the, it's called the Wailing Tunnel, or the Tunnel of Sorrows, over from Doge's Palace over to the next block over. And what happened was, we were in a, with a bunch of tourists, and as soon as we went in a dungeon there, it was just me and my ex-partner, and just really weird, man. So after that, I felt kind of really down until we went into Giudecca. And there was one church I insisted we go into. And that turned out to be a church that was built just after the medieval plague in Venice. And basically, they didn't let the doge actually come over from the main canal over to Giudecca to kind of be at the ceremony, and I felt so much lighter after that. Sounds weird, can't explain it, you know, don't have any evidence for it, but I'll tell you what, that was kind of my story. It sounds a bit weird, but there we go. Thanks for your podcast, and really appreciate it, guys. So keep it up. Cheers. Bye.
Very cool. Very simple. That's the way we like it. That's the way we are. Tim and I are very cool and very simple. And now you can be that way with us, 651-300-4977. Tim, where are we going next in the world of supernatural news?
Fayetteville, Tennessee, Dave.
Well, doggies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm craving barbecue now. I want barbecue. I didn't get, for my birthday dinner, I had Italian, and that was nice, but I wanted barbecue.
Really?
Just saying.
Did you think of telling them you wanted to go to barbecue instead of Italian?
Well, no, because Italian was just fine with me, too.
Oh, okay.
I'm not very discerning.
Italian barbecue.
What's that?
What if we get Italian barbecue and we introduce that next year at the state fair?
Ooh, spaghetti and right? Barbecue ribs.
Right. What if we were to take barbecued ribs, then wrap it in spaghetti with a little marinara, and then what we do is, Tim, we take it and we deep fry it and we put it on a stick. Huh?
And then offer some sort of Ipecac or something for you to throw up right afterwards. Because
why?
I don't think that's staying down, Dave. I think I do.
Really? It's delicioso. Let's try it. Deep fried ribs with spaghetti wrapped around it. Mm-hmm. We'll just set it. It'll be spaghetti and meat strips on a stick.
All
right.
Okay. Fayetteville, Tennessee. That's where we're going next. It turns out that an owner says that teens, metal scrappers, and paranormal thrill seekers are breaking into an old Fayetteville hospital. It's not the zombie apocalypse, and nobody's looking for medicine anymore. They're just thrill seekers. An old hospital in Fayetteville is getting visitors for all the wrong reasons. It turns out that Jamie Tipton, owner of a shuttered Lincoln Regional Hospital, says that metal scrappers, paranormal investigators, and thrill-seeking teenagers are descending on his property and breaking in almost daily. You'd think a few security guards would stop that.
Yeah, they really can't afford it. Do you know how expensive that is to have round-the-clock surveillance on those locations? Well, I don't know why you can't booby-trap it. Have like a couple of cameras. When you see somebody come in, you just flip a switch and like everything starts coursing with electricity. two or three deaths like that, people are going to stop, Tim.
Yeah, that are landmines.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hospital closed down in 2001 and Tipton took possession in 2013. In 2015, he allowed the Travel Channel's Ghost Adventure show to film an episode at the site and said the exposure opened up the floodgates for break-ins. If you board up all the doors, they break windows. If you board up all the windows, they'll push an air conditioner out and crawl through. They're so rude. They climb up to the first floor and go to the second floor windows, he added. Tipton says he's tried locking doors, welding doors, and even putting bars in the walkways. He said oftentimes intruders come from out of town and will get what they came for. If they show up with a whole bunch of people at once, they're not going to drive home. They're going to go in, he said. Tipton said he wanted to renovate the property and turn it into a public resource of some kind, but planning, finances, and logistics have gotten in the way. Fletcher Smith lives just across the street from the hospital and said he'd like for Tipton to turn the building into a recreational facility for the youth. Yeah, teach them how to give shots.
For the Utes. Yeah.
You know, teach them how to give shots and fix people up and turn it into a recreational hospital.
Did you just say that you would teach kids how to give people a fix with a shoot-up?
No, give them shots, give vaccinations.
Smack, some of the heroin or a little ride on the white pony, Tim?
Why are you taking it there?
You're the one that's all, let's teach the kids how to shoot up and get a fix
in
an old abandoned building, Tim. People are already doing that, Tim.
Giving vaccines, Dave. Giving vaccines. Doing useful things for the community. Doctoring up people's bullet wounds out there on the street. People are shooting each other these days. Just saying. Mobile clinics. Stuff like that. Helping the community.
Slight me a twist. All right, so go on with the story.
All right, so Fletcher Smith lives just across the street from the hospital. He says, turn it into something for the Utes, a recreational facility. Let them step on dirty needles as they play basketball. I don't know. I threw that last part in.
That's a bad, bad plan.
It is, yeah. Smith said they can do ACT training in that center. They could do SAT training. They could do OPP training.
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah. I think that the only way they're going to change the environment is to change the mindset of the youth, he went on to say. Fayetteville Mayor Michael Wisenet? Close enough. Said the planning department does want Tipton to do something with the building and called it an eyesore. He said the city would be receptive to something akin to Low Mill, an arts venue in Huntsville. Ooh, there you go. You could just bring in a bunch of canvases and let people paint. That's an idea. I don't know. That's all I got for that story.
You know what? I have a better idea.
Sure.
What you do is you contact one or two of the big paranormal teams in town.
Yeah.
Yep. You give them access to the building.
Yep.
And let them run it. And then let them do some paranormal ghost tours and trips and investigations.
Yep.
And then they keep an eye on it like a watchdog.
Yeah.
And they'll do it for free as long as they get a percentage of the ghost hunt fees.
There you go.
I'm telling you, that's the way to handle it. That's the way. I like it.
I'm with you. I'm with you on it. Yep.
All right.
Yep. Well, I got one more here. One more of these here stories.
You do? You have one more story, you say?
Yeah, I do. Yep.
One more story?
One more story.
One final story with us?
Yes, I do.
Supernatural news?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
A spooky video of a child ghost playing inside a house goes viral. Nothing like a spooky kid just going nuts and playing with whatever he can find. I know that sounds bad. I'm sorry. If there's an edit point anywhere in there, I'm sure I should take it, but I'm going to leave that in the recording. The video showing paranormal activity, what is claimed to be the child ghost playing around the staircase inside a house went viral as it was viewed thousands of times by internet users since last Wednesday. The unusual activity was reportedly caught on a home security camera earlier this month, which was uploaded on YouTube by a user, Joel Nolan. He's hardly knowing anything. Nolan. Viewers can watch a misty outline enters in the bottom right-hand corner in the footage of a living room where a cat is sitting in the middle. always the beginning of trouble, Dave, whenever a cat's sitting in the middle of a room doing nothing. Cats are troublemakers. Cats will do anything, especially when they know they're on video. Rule number one. The apparition seems to move backwards and forwards before disappearing out of sight as the cat sits impassively on the floor. I've never heard that term put that way before. Nolan wrote on August 8th, 2019 at 12:54 a.m., our security camera picks up a strange visitor walking through the kitchen. Some claim are saying it's a little boy. Others are saying they see a boy, a girl, and their dog. We don't know for sure, but let us know what you think. One of those who saw it and commented asked Joey, anyone die recently in the family, I wonder? Pretty cool, but you don't see much. It looks like someone walking around. Joey replied, no recent deaths, fortunately. We've been digging into the house's history to see if there's any significance with the date of the occurrence. Not much activity before or after. One person said, yep, it's a spider, which another claimed it was a bit of dust. There you go.
Ah, bit of dust. That didn't sell as well as bit of honey.
No,
remember
it didn't.
Do they still sell bit of honey?
They do. If you ever want to wreck your teeth, they still sell it in little bitty bags, you know, like the two for $2 bags in the candy section.
Pass.
Yeah.
I'll pass.
Oh,
well, that's
it.
We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. And remember, in the meantime, looking for something fun to do, check out Amazon Prime. Their new series, Carnival Row, is available right now.